Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another great edition of Talking Tigs. I am Scott Girard. Joining me, like usual, Tommy Johnson, Daniel Zollinger. Tigers had a bye week, so nothing to stress about. We just got to watch other teams get upset. It was another week for that. Tigers moved up in the polls, got a lot of stuff to go over, including, you know, just the kind of fallout from Nussmeier and a supposed injury, as well as looking forward to our next matchup, which will be at home against South Carolina. But before we jump into any of that, I want to see how you guys are doing. Hope you had a great week and a good weekend. And yeah, happy to join you all again.
Well, hey, likewise. Good to be with you as always. Welcome to the podcast. Excited about covering this week of college football and another SEC matchup for LSU. Hopefully a bounce back game for us after a disappointing loss to Ole Miss. And I'm excited to talk about it with y'all.
Yep, it's always a good weekend when LSU doesn't lose. So we managed to accomplish that. Hopefully we're not defeated by the bye week. And yeah, most of the top teams took care of business, but there were a few kind of catastrophes on the board, which we'll go into, that LSU is benefiting from a little bit. So that's pretty cool. And then we got another, I think, kind of top weekend of college football coming up this weekend. A lot of good matchups, including LSU versus South Carolina. Very excited for that. And then some kind of off the field stuff too, definitely. Intrigue in Tiger land. So let's attack that today.
Yeah, let's attack that, because there always seems to be that. I mean, it was a bye week, but I mean, we could make a show even without mentioning our game against South Carolina, or like you said, the win that we had, because we didn't have a catastrophe this week like some other teams who will be named later. But first, I don't know, I guess I wanted to check in with you guys, because we had a bye week, and in that time we kind of got a little bit more clarity. Yeah, Garrett Nussmeier's been hurt, and he was resting this week to, I guess, help his recuperation, meaning Michael Van Buren had a lot of, or most of, if not all of, the first team snaps, which is great. I don't see why, you know, maybe they couldn't have been splitting them before now, based on what's happened, but I don't know. I want to get into that, because I feel like someone was just not being honest. I don't know if it was the coaches. They knew what was going on and they just didn't tell anybody, or they just didn't, you know, they wanted to protect Nuss, which, you know, I guess I get, it's a program thing. Or if maybe Nuss was just not being honest, you know, maybe they knew about the injury, obviously. I mean, remember before the season, everyone was so scared because there was this silly rumor of Nussmeier's knee getting hurt, but it turns out, oh no, it's just a knee sprain, he's fine. But that wasn't the story. The story was this other thing that we didn't really hear about back then. Is this an abdominal strain, or, you know, some sort of Miles Brennan type injury where it's just, you know, it's something that it's not descript what's happening, or, you know, what the recovery time is. He's toughing through it. But if Garrett hid that from his coaches, saying, yeah, I'm good, coach. Are you sure, Garrett? Because you can sit. No, I'm good. I would get that too. But, you know, of course he's not being honest, because we can obviously see he's affected. I don't know which it is. Or, you know, if the coaches say, well, yeah, I mean, we can kind of see he's off in practice. I mean, if they're not, I don't know, are they just not being honest with themselves? But point being, felt like something's amiss there. But I guess my question is, even in spite of all that and just what, you know, losing to Ole Miss, how he did, if you guys knew that we were going to be 4-1 in the bye week, would it really make a difference? Because I think that's where most of us would have had them pegged anyway, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. That's actually not something I've thought about, because yes, like you said, I think all of us, I think Scott, you picked us to beat Clemson, right?
I did. I just wasn't sure about Ole Miss.
You weren't sure about Ole Miss. Yeah. So, you know, I picked us to lose game one. I think Daniel did the same. I think we all, you know, looked at that schedule and saw that there were definitely challenging games. I think that's actually a good point. I haven't heard from a lot of the LSU media, like a little bit of a bright side of like, hey, you know, 6 months ago, if you look at the schedule and you say, look, you, at this point in the season, you're 4-1. That's can't really complain with that.
Buying.
But
I'm buying.
But I do think that there is a lot to be said about the Garrett Nussmeier situation. There is a lot to be said about his and this is something that I think we noticed. I've noticed it throughout this year, but it hasn't been – it was really apparent in the Ole Miss game. And then when you go back and look at kind of like – just look at – pick, take your pick any part of last season. He has no zip on the ball. And so it's apparent to me that he's clearly injured. What is the extent of that injury? I'm not sure. I think that, I think we'll get into whether or not he should, he should play against South Carolina, but, as far as who is to blame or who is to, whether or not he's been honest about his perform or about his own status to the coaches, that's on Brian Kelly and Joe Sloan. I mean, they're the ones who are seeing him every day. And they're seeing what we're seeing, they should be seeing way more. Like, the sample size that we're seeing, we've seen him in 5 games. They've seen him from spring to fall camp to practice throughout this entire season so far. Either it could be, and really, like, either there is a degradation of, from the way he looked during the off season to spring to fall camp. Like, did he have that zip in March? Did he have that zip in April and May that we know he's had, that he had last year? Or has he been injured this whole time? Did he lose it at some point in the off season and he's got a nagging injury where they can honestly say, like, look, he doesn't need surgery. It's not something catastrophic, but he's had it where it's been nagging him the whole time. Have they gotten used to this kind of real floaty ball that he throws with no downfield success? And, really he's only capable of throwing out routes, short drags, cross field types of throws. I don't know. But either way, it's kind of an indictment of this coaching staff. And then when you put that together with the way Brian Kelly has treated the question and treated the situation, which is anyone who pays attention.
How dare you?
Like, anyone who pays attention is right to question, like, hey, why is the guy we're seeing in the 18 jersey, why doesn't he look like the guy in the 13 jersey from last year? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a mess.
Right. I think the most frustrating thing about it to me, and that was a good analysis, Tommy, is kind of the lack of honesty and the lack of clarity that you mentioned, because you want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. You want to say, okay, they want to do what's best for LSU football. Nussmeier wants to be on the field. He wants to win. Brian Kelly wants to get the most out of his players and give his opponents the least amount of information possible. And so that's all well and good, but whether they're actually doing the right thing in order to accomplish those goals is a different story. Injuries are unfortunately a part of football. A guy goes out there and he gets hurt, but then you're like, okay, that sucks. Take your time off, rest up. It's going to be next man up and we'll move on. But then when it's something like this, where it's kind of like an open secret. Everybody knows something is going on, but you don't exactly know what, then it's just frustrating for the fans. It's like, well, is it going to be more of the same next week? Could we get a different quarterback? Is he going to be healed in 1 week or 1 month or 1 year? It's been dragging on for quite a while at this point, it seems. And so that's what's gotten everyone kind of up in arms online, and rightfully so. And Brian Kelly has kept that kind of shroud of mystery around the whole situation, which kind of harkens back to Miles Brennan injuries and umpteen random medical issues that LSU has had over the years that grow tiring as a fan base. And so I want the best for Nussmeier and for the team. And it is a little bit scary. It's like, say Nussmeier's at 70%, like, is 70% Nussmeier better than the alternative of Michael Van Buren? That's only a question the coaches can make. But once you see Nussmeier having little to no success over multiple weeks, then you're like, he can't really be that much worse. Just give him a try. And if he is worse, just go back to Nuss. It's not a hard solution.
And I think that, you know, and there, Daniel, you brought it up last week. And I think it's something that's important to mention is that Nussmeier, especially in the age of NIL and the age of transfer portal and really the free agency of college football, but Nussmeier has the same agent as Brian Kelly. I think that's an important point to make, and you know, whether or not that guy's, I mean, I don't think he's necessarily pulling the strings and making all the roster decisions for LSU, but I do think that guy, when that guy's in your corner, he's in Nussmeier's corner, he's in Brian Kelly's corner, they're constantly talking. I think that probably has some sort of influence, but you have to, starting out at the season, Nussmeier was a Heisman favorite and one of the highest graded NFL prospects at the quarterback position. At this point in the season, I don't think there's anybody who considers him to be a first round pick. Is starting him through this injury the best thing for him long term? You know, the argument could be like, well, look, we want to do what's right by Nussmeier. He's been on this team. He's waited his turn. He's done it the right way, and we can't take his chance away from him. Well, it's like, if you're putting out this tape, you might be, and you're injured, and this is like, we can all agree, this is not the arm talent. I mean, this is a guy who had arm talent. You could see it last year. He was considered the gunslinger, where he could hurl the ball down the field. The product we're seeing is not that. And I mean, he's slipping down NFL draft boards. So it makes it feel like this is a hubris ego play by Kelly, where Kelly has identified Nussmeier as his guy and he wants to stand by it because the further the media, the LSU media / fan base / social media at large makes it an issue, the more Kelly is going to dig in. That's how I see it.
Kind of like he got his hand caught in the cookie jar a little bit by trying to play Nussmeier while he's hurt. Now he's just got to stand by the decision that he's made, because if he switches to Van Buren, he's kind of caving into all the pressure. And he seems to be a bit too proud for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, but just wait until the first half of Tiger Stadium this Saturday. If we do see Nuss and we see the same thing, LSU fans will have no qualms about letting him know, even in the first quarter. Like, if we have 2-3 and outs in a row, they're going to start booing right then and there, and it's going to be ugly because we're going to be on national TV. They already announced we're going to be on the SEC network. So that'll be pressure for Kelly. Yeah, he probably avoided some early on, but still, it's not quite clear what happened. But I can't say I would blame Nuss if it is him just trying to say he's not as hurt as he is, I'll get to Kelly in a second, but think if you're Nuss, it's like everything's right in front of you. All you have to do is just show up and deliver. Then you have this injury, and I imagine Kelly, if they did see it in practice, he's probably asked him about it, and he's like, all right, well, if you're hurt, let me know. Yeah, but your first game's Clemson, and this could be a Heisman season for me. This could be a national championship season for this team, this school, this state. I don't want to mess that up. I would totally get that. But in the same, like you were talking about, Tommy, I could see Brian Kelly too. Like, he probably, and maybe some of the coaches see this as their window too. Like, Kelly's on year four. He's done okay that first year, came out of the gates, won a Heisman with his quarterback next year, and then nothing really last year. But, he's starting to feel the heat too. So he probably sees this. And if he really thought his best hope was Nuss, a hurt Nuss, well, then I don't know what to say. Just can't trust the guy.
I mean, we'll wait and see if we ever get to see Martin Van Buren, if we ever get to see Michael Van Buren, as the quarterback. But something that people have talked about is the lack of depth in the quarterback room. Bryce Underwood aside, losing Bryce Underwood was a huge blow. You think about it, in another world, this team, you might, maybe after week two or three, you have a Bryce Underwood coming in and starting for Garrett Nussmeier, for an injured Garrett Nussmeier. And, you know, it's a different story we're seeing. But in spite of losing, Bryce Underwood, the moves, we really made no notable moves at quarterback other than getting the 11th president of the United States. So that's kind of a says something about Brian Kelly.
Put all our eggs in one basket, right?
Yeah.
And as we transition to the South Carolina preview, I do expect Garrett Nussmeier to be the starter on Saturday. There was pictures of him practicing this week, and he's got 2 weeks off, although that may just be a media smokescreen.
But not only was there images of him practicing this week, but Brian Kelly went to this podium and said he is not practicing this week because we're resting him.
And then immediately they posted.
And then immediately he's practicing. It's like, wait, what are you talking about? Well, what's going on?
Was he handing off or was he throwing? I guess
he was handing off. And he looked like he was looking into the sky while he's doing it. Maybe that's why he's having so many issues. But yeah, I think he'll start. And then unless things really go south, like we're down by two touchdowns or more, I think he stays in the game the whole way. And then we just kind of get more confused on the podcast next week.
I don't think there's a world where I don't think there's a world where, barring some injury that I genuinely hope does not happen, but like an injury where Garrett Nussmeier literally cannot play, physically unable to play, that he does not start the rest of the season. I don't see Brian Kelly making a move like that.
Right.
And I can't recall, and I'm not a Notre Dame historian, but I feel like I follow the sport enough and follow Brian Kelly just as one of the, you know, top coaches in college football. I don't remember him making a drastic shift where he's like ever benched a starter. Like, I don't remember. I don't know and I think that would have been like kind of a national thing, you know, a storyline in college football, similar to like Saban benching Jalen Hurts for Tua.
Right. Well, I think Kelly had that maybe Notre Dame once or twice. I remember in the later years, he kind of had that. Would he play Deshaun Kaiser, or I forget who the other guy was, but I mean, I imagine every coach might have it, but that's the difference. Is Nick Saban didn't hesitate for a second. Had this quarterback take him all the way to the championship game, yeah. It's not working out. And Saban goes, well, this isn't working out. Sorry, Tua, what can you do? I'll see what you do in practice. Get out there and do it. Boom. He does it. They win. Season over. The other guy transfers. And that was it. I mean, if that's for us, great. It also makes me think back to these other misses that we've had. Cause I mean, LSU, it's like every time we think we have our guy, like TJ Finley, Walker Howe, it's like, what if Walker never left? Would he have been next man up? I know it didn't work out at Ole Miss either. And he's back to Lafayette and
didn't work out at Lafayette either. I think he's out for the season.
Right, but but point being, like, if he wasn't injured, but it's like, if he'd have stayed, like, could he, I don't know, LSU just seems to have bad luck with quarterbacks, except for the ones that have transferred in.
True.
At least the last decade, or 15 years, rather. Anyway, so we have that. Daniel's saying he's going to start. Probably. I'd say yes with a short leash. I think I'll go, look, Garrett, at the end of this second drive, if we do another three and out, just if we're throwing, I just want you to grab your ribs when you walk to the sideline. Just give me a little something so I can, you know. Oh, well, see, he got hurt on that throw. That's why he's coming out, and that's why we're putting MVB in, you know. Anyway, I'm just speculating, of course. So looking forward to South Carolina, I mean, they're kind of – average now, I guess. I mean, they have us, and then after us, man, it's murderer's row for them. So I really hope we don't, you know, we're not caught sleeping. I don't think we will be, because we really need a win to stay on track too, because our schedule isn't much easier. It's just as bad, and I don't think we can really afford to lose except maybe one more game, right? I mean, you saw what happened to Texas and Penn State. They lost. Now they're out of the top 25. Of course, they were
as they ugly. Should be.
But they were ugly losses. But I don't know, man. It's like, unless we figure stuff out, you know, off this bye week, and we look like a totally different team, then yeah, we're going to be one loss away from being on the outside ourselves, when it was supposed to be not, you know, almost a gimme for us to at least make the playoff, right? That was everyone's expectation.
No, absolutely. And I do think that, like, having some of those losses, though, like a Texas loss, which was one of the you know, top five teams in the nation to start off with, 1-2 against Ohio State, having them lose and having a Penn State lose, it makes it so that this is more open of a season than it's been in a while. So it's definitely time for us. Like, this is the time for us to take advantage. There's really, it's almost like that makes it less of an excuse to not be in the playoff conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think that loss to Ole Miss, which really, you know, I don't know. I feel like we should have won that game if, you know, by just talent versus talent. I don't know if they were necessarily.
We were outcoached.
We were outcoached. I think we were outcoached. And I think, yeah, exactly. And so it makes the rest of these games are really must wins. I mean, this South Carolina game is a must win.
Yeah,
you can lose one to maybe Bama at Bama. But most of the games moving forward, A&M is going to be a tough one. That's going to be a must yep. win. Oklahoma, Oklahoma. I'm a little bit, you know, Mateer, his health is a little bit more in question, which makes me a little bit less scared of them. But gosh, you look at like how A&M is playing. They're a little bit scary down the pipe.
Yeah. Well, South Carolina was one. They actually had a fair amount of buzz coming into the season. I think they were ranked like 13th or something. Mm-hmm. And now they're 3-2 and they've dropped out of the top 25. I mean, they do have talent on the board. Their quarterback, Lenora Sellers, was, I don't know about a Heisman favorite, but maybe a Heisman contender going into the year. And he gave us a lot of fits last year in the game in Columbia. So he's back. He had a little bit of an injury issue earlier in the season, but I think he's full strength now. So he's quick on his feet and through the air. So we'll need Harold Perkins to put the spy on him and contain him better than we did against Trinidad Chambliss with Ole Miss.
Or actually just do it. We didn't spy Chambliss at all.
That's true. They had plenty of fourth down conversions. Nope. and easy yards for Ole Miss. So that's one quick correction that else you can make. And then South Carolina's defense is not that great, I would say. I mean, they, got beat 31-7 by Vanderbilt at home. So, and then they lost kind of a close one at Missouri, and Missouri's not a bad team either. And then their most recent outing,
5-0.
Yeah, they beat Kentucky. So they're kind of okay. I mean, not that great. LSU on paper should beat them, but they don't play football on paper. They play it on the turf. So I think LSU will go out there and bounce back. Tommy said it's a must win, and it really is, because that Ole Miss loss stings, but you can't let it linger over you. To drop two in a row would not eliminate us, but pretty much effectively eliminate us.
You have to run the table at that point.
Yeah, with like three top 10 teams still on the schedule, and then a couple other tough ones as well. So winning this one can kind of set us back on the rails, and a nice performance from either Garrett Nussmeier or Van Buren, or a combination of both, would do a lot to assuage the worries and confidence of the fans in general, because when you're winning, everybody's happy for the most part. We had some valid questions towards the beginning of this season where we were winning, but winning ugly. So if we can get this one, and then we've got a little bit of a, who do we play after that? Vanderbilt's. I mean, that one's not that much easier. In fact, probably tougher at Vanderbilt. They gave Alabama the run for their money this past week. But we just need to put this one in the bag and move on.
Yeah. I, as far as South Carolina though, yeah, it was all about Lenora Sellers. And I mean, like you said, I don't think the injury is complete. It's not affecting him like it's affecting us, apparently, or at least not to the same degree. I don't know, though. I looked it up. He's at about 880 or so yards for the year. That's in five games. They're 3-2. So, you know, they're passing for about $175 a game. It's about it. So I think they're more going to, I don't see how they can beat us through the air unless we just completely collapse, but I don't see that happening. So it's going to be on the ground, and maybe we do spy, because that's what was missing last week. But I guess I don't know why that was such an issue. But as far as our offense, well, I guess it remains to be seen how our QB1 is going to feel. I guess we won't know until we see that first drive or two. You can't say, oh, well, we're going to game plan just to kind of ease him. If he is starting and they game plan, you can't do this handoff pass or pass handoff. You know, it's just, I think they got to play the game, how, you know, to win the game, however they would do if he was healthy, because that's what we want to see. If he's not, he shouldn't be out there. So I think Tiger fans will let them know soon if that's what they don't see. And then, you know, that's going to be on BK. I can't wait for that that halftime interview when he's, these fans are spoiled. No, they're not stupid. That's what it is. So anyway, I feel like South Carolina could move the ball a little bit. They'll get some points. Although I feel like LSU, I don't know, maybe Ness is at least close enough to healthy to where he can chuck it downfield, and we'll see that zip that we saw, you know, when we first saw him, and we were just, oh my God, this kid can throw. We just don't want him to throw it into the other guy's hands. So I want to see that guy where he just throws it downfield without even thinking twice. If so, I think the Tigers could win big, or even if not, and MVB comes in, he'll get us moving. I'd say Tigers 36, South Carolina 17.
Not okay. Bad. One matchup I wanted to call out, and this is one that we've harped on a lot, and we thought it was going to punish us against Clemson and Florida, and it didn't really, but then it reared its head against Ole Miss, who had the kind of worst defenses. South Carolina's D-line versus our O-line. They have a pretty strong front led by Dylan Stewart, who's got 3.5 sacks, a real fast edge rusher. And yeah, Ole Miss, they succeeded a lot, rushing 3, dropping 8, and forcing us to put the ball in tight spaces. If Dylan Stewart can get after the quarterback and just put pressure on a Nuss who's not mobile and not playing with the most confidence, then it could be a long day. We have shuffled our O-line around a lot. We had injuries to Weston Davis, among others. We'll see whether Carius Kern and I think DJ Tressor might be back in the rotation. Any number of guys. Brian Kelly just got to figure out a 5 that can do something in both the pass and the run block game, because they've been more or less pretty porous for the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was, we haven't mentioned at all. It's all been about Nuss and if he's going to be healthy and what's Brian Kelly doing. But yeah, fact remains, what if they just do what Ole Miss did? They'll just rush 3, still get to Nuss, and then, you know, we're kind of back where we were last week. We got to be able to run the ball. Have they worked on that this week? What do you think?
I think that they have to, because like you mentioned, both of y'all put it very well. I mean, like Daniel said, they have a very impressive front, probably better than the one that gave us fits against Ole Miss. I think that for everything that we've talked about with, it's going to be Nussmeier. If it's Nussmeier, we have no downfield threat. If we have no downfield threat, then we're going to have the same mid to short crossing routes, out routes, drags, in routes, slants, that kind
behind
of thing.
The line screen passes.
Screens. Yes, absolutely. Screen plays are basic. Well, I mean, yes, I put those in a separate category, but you're right. So if we know that that's basically the only thing he can throw because of he's got like a physical limitation. He can't push the ball down the field, which we've seen for 5 games now. Then why not? Why wouldn't they drop more into coverage, like into blanket that middle, that kind of mid to short end of the field? Well, then that leaves the screens, like you're talking about, which I in my opinion, the screens basically are our running game. It gets our skill players in space for them to make a play. It gets them the ball in space. Which we had some success with, but not great success. I think that you're totally right. If we're going to commit to Nussmeier, we really need to establish the run. And I think that this is going to – and it's going to be a big test of our offensive line. And I would love to see – and it, I mean, it's kind of weird. It's like, what would an LSU fan say this after seeing it for years with Les Miles? But I would – let's do what we did at the end of the Florida game. Line up in that I formation. Take some of the pressure off of Nussmeier. Put Jack Pyburn at fullback like he did. I mean, he played fullback for us a little bit.
Yeah.
Put him in there. And run it down their throats. And it, you know, then you might open up some stuff to make the game a little bit easier for Nussmeier. But if we're going to line up and they kind of did a mix of it where they had a little pistol formation and they motioned Xavion Thomas to the tailback position and then try to do little runs. But I think you got to commit it to it full all the way. And kind of accept that, look, this, you know, somewhat air raid scheme that you've kind of built around Nussmeier is just not going to work if he does not have the ability to throw the ball down the field, which at this point he has not shown in the year 2025 that he can do it. Hopefully he gets healthy and that changes, but he has every single ball that he has thrown that I can remember, every single ball that he's thrown this year and has tried to take the top off the defense has been short and has put the wide receiver having to come back to the ball where if he'd hit him in stride, it was a touchdown. Most of the time that's to Chris Hilton. And until that changes, I think you really have to reevaluate this offensive scheme.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we talked about it earlier. Brian Kelly said he was going to rest Nuss this week. But he did get some action in practice. They released some photos. It was a picture of him handing off. So maybe that was from the I formation, and your dreams will be coming true.
I'm telling you.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's another, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Joe Sloan. I think he's a nice guy from everything I've seen. I think he's a good recruiter. But I just don't know if he's a great play caller. I just don't know if he's a great schemer. And I think he's kind of committed to being to a one dimensional look at this at offense. And I think it's going to be a detriment to us. Mm-hmm. That being said, I still think we win. I think we win. But I think it might be another ugly win for us. And right. I think it might look, I don't anticipate us really making any progress. I don't think we're going to come out off this bye week and be like, wow, that's the new look LSU. They really got things right over 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I mostly agree with that. I think it's going to be a win for LSU, but more of the same, close, low scoring. It is a night game in Death Valley, 6:45 central kickoff on SEC Network. I think LSU wins at 27-20, just one touchdown margin there, and defense more or less carries this again as they have the early on in the season.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm about the same. I'll say LSU 28, South Carolina 17. I think that I'll put a caveat on there. I think maybe one of those scores will come from a defensive, like a pick six or a forced fumble, something like that. I think that we're going to have to control the turnover or dominate them on turnovers. That being said, Lenore Sellers only has one interception this entire year. This is going to be the best defense. I think this might be the best defense he faces the entire year.
Yeah.
But he's not like Jackson Dart in the Saints game today. If you saw that, where he's just throwing pick after pick.
And speaking of turnovers, yeah, the Saints scooped and scored one themselves.
I think we get the win. But again, I think it's ugly. I think that, I think it's more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, to his only one interception, he also only has four touchdowns. So that's why I don't think, South Carolina is like a big air threat. I mean, stranger things have happened, but night game in Tiger Stadium, with Tigers something to prove, hopefully. They got a little chip on their shoulder. That's why I feel like maybe they'll come out roaring. Again, that's this week. We're just looking at 1-0, baby, right? 1-0 every season. Then we'll talk about going to Vanderbilt and that being the same case. But, I mean, It was another kind of topsy-turvy week in college football. Big upsets. I think the biggest one was probably Penn State and UCLA for me, because no one was expecting that. I mean, it's not like they were both just kind of trudging along and somehow UCLA just stumbled into a win. Like, they were boat racing them at one point. And Nico was looking like, I don't know, the guy in Tennessee that shouldn't have left. But they won. Penn State kind of did come back, but UCLA was in that game. They had that game in hand. Other one was Texas and Florida. I don't know. I kind of figured Billy wouldn't go out without a fight, you know, and they were going to get somebody along the way. I knew Texas was going to get stumped up somewhere along the way, and now they have Oklahoma this upcoming week in the Red River Shootout. But, yeah, that was kind of not surprising. But, yeah, they kind of dominated Texas too, even though Texas made it look closer than it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, Texas was preseason number one, Penn State preseason number two, and now with this week's loss, both are unranked after 6 weeks to the season, which would have been pretty unfathomable if you had told most college football fans that before the season started. And yet here we are, Penn State with that big egg in UCLA. They did a field rush afterwards, but it's hard to even call it that because there was like 20 fans in the stadium. That one of the security guards like leveled like a little girl who was like out there running on the field. It's like, hey, come on. These field rushes have gone too far. And then,
that's all he could catch, by the way. That's probably why.
And then Texas, Florida, the Swamp is a tough place to play. And this is kind of like Billy Napier. Is he saving his job with this one win? I don't know if it went that far, but he may have bought himself a couple weeks at least. So, and it makes LSU's victory over Florida look that just a little bit better. Texas with the arch debacle and now this, it's a little bit sad. I think I picked them as my preseason champion, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so that's rough. LSU, I mean, we'll take it if our compatriots are dropping, but that was pretty wild. Alabama versus Vanderbilt, that was a good game. Vanderbilt was in it the whole time. It was closer than the score. Alabama scored one right at the very end to make it look a little worse than it was. But Pavia put on a good show. But the Crimson Tide with DeBoer, not too bad. That early season loss to Florida State's kind of been wiped away a little bit, and so the Tide are on the up.
Yeah, they are. The only thing I'll add, Daniel, you said most people didn't see Penn State and Texas being out of the top 10 or not being deserving of being in the top 10 to begin with. I will push back on that. I did not see Texas, but I think if you pull the tape, you will see that I did question Penn State being a preseason number two, and did predict them to lose to Oregon. Now, that being said, I'll be honest about myself as well. I did predict Clemson to be a national contender, so maybe that kind of evens out, but I think I kind of know ball. That also, again, I think that the big takeaway for me from the Alabama Vanderbilt game is that Ty Simpson's the best quarterback in college football right now.
Very solid.
He is extremely solid. He's got a lot of the things that you kind of wanted to see out of Garrett Nussmeier. Good decision making, sat, kind of waited his turn, did it the right way, been recruited and then stayed at a place, and has a little bit of, a little bit of athleticism. He's not Jaden Daniels, but he's got some athleticism. He can throw the ball down the field, really can pick apart defenses and is able to utilize a lot of offensive weapons, everything that we kind of hoped we would see out of Nuss. I think that the other kind of story, Miami rolls on against a Florida State team that, had a quality win against Alabama. So they're kind of the real deal. I don't know. They might be the best team in the country right now. I don't know.
Carson Beck, good quarterback.
Carson Beck.
What?
You know who I think the standout from that game is, and it just shows another, another what if or another, what happened, is CJ Daniels kind of being the star of that offense.
Yeah, wide receiver one for Miami, having a really good season, and who basically couldn't even hardly get on the field last year at LSU because he had some hype coming as a transfer, I believe, from Liberty, and he had like two catches the entire season, and now he's wide receiver one at number two Miami. Kind of wild. Meanwhile, we can't really find too many reliable receiving options, even though that was supposed to be one of our strengths going into the year.
Yeah. And a lot of good games coming up this weekend too, in addition to, you know, the Tigers. I kind of can already tell which way it'll go, but you know, you have top ranked Ohio State at Illinois. Then you also have, like I said, the Red River Shootout, that rivalry. I don't know. I imagine from what we've seen of Texas, Oklahoma will probably have their way with them. Then some other good games, but what is it? Alabama goes to Mizzou. So I imagine Alabama might handle business and then knock off another undefeated. Any others you guys saw?
Yeah, there's a fair amount of good matchups. College Game Day announced they're going to Eugene, Oregon, number 3 Oregon hosting number 7 Indiana. Yeah. So I don't know if that's what most people before the season started, like we said, would have not believed you if Indiana versus Oregon was the College Game Day at this point, but undefeated teams there should be a good one. And then, yeah, you called out Alabama going to Missouri, who's been cruising along at number 14. Couple other ones. Let's see. Georgia at Auburn. Auburn hasn't had a great season, but Georgia's been a little bit vulnerable, and they've had a historic rivalry with Auburn, so it could be a tripping point for the Bulldogs there. And
South's oldest rivalry.
Exactly. What else? Go ahead, Tommy. You were going to say something?
I was going to mention the Auburn Georgia game as well as the Florida Texas A&M game. Florida going into Texas A&M after a big win against Texas.
Yeah, I feel like they'll trip up though for some reason. Just because if it was at home, I'd probably favor the Gators. But on the road at Kyle Field, I don't know if Billy's got two in a row in him. Do you?
I don't know. I think it's one to watch. I would not put it past. Yeah. I think right now they've got nothing to lose, and right. We have seen. That A&M, now this is somewhat of a new look, Mike Elko A&M, but A&M historically has been known to trip up when they're right on the cusp of greatness. So yeah. A number 5 A&M team right. With an SEC that's opened up, where the usual suspects, the dynasty type teams are really not, do not have a solid, hold on the league. I think it's a spot where A&M could slip up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And then one more, not super high profile, but way down the calendar. I mean, LSU versus South Carolina kicks out at 6:45. We got a little former Pac-12 and now Big 12 after dark between Arizona State going to Utah, kicking off at 9:15 Central Time. So that one can close your day out after LSU is wrapped up, because somebody has to win the Big 12. There hasn't really been a dominant team. BYU or Texas Tech looking pretty good. They're undefeated, and BYU is as well. But Arizona State and Utah certainly still in the hunt there. So should be fun. Oh, and also we get the start of some Wednesday night action. Not exactly any great teams there, but we got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then all day Saturday. So it should be a fun week of college football.
Yeah, a long week of college football. One other one I think is interesting. It might end up being a blowout, actually, but I don't know. Arkansas at Tennessee, because Tennessee's still sitting there. I think they're still ranked behind us. They only have the one loss to Georgia. But, I mean, if they win this game, I think they have some good steam going. But Arkansas, I mean, they just, they fired their coach. So I don't know, maybe it's like a gut check moment, because they have lost some other close games. And maybe it's like UCLA, right, where the team just finally comes together. It's not at home, but, I mean, Arkansas definitely has some talent. So I don't know, maybe they'll just at least make things tough for Tennessee. But that could be an interesting game, at least for the first half or first three quarters.
I agree. I think that this is what's old is new again. Bobby Petrino, head coach at Arkansas, could he bring back some of the old magic? Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. We'll
maybe.
See.
Yeah.
I think that's something worth watching. I'm glad you flagged it for the listeners.
Sure. Other than that, I think that was pretty much it as far as the other games. I think we covered everything else in this week in the past. Also, although it's just. Indiana number 7. I feel like it was kind of like last year. They were just there just because. I think we'll probably see a lot of this, with Big Ten and SEC teams. If they're undefeated, just move them on up, because the conferences themselves are solid enough. Maybe they warrant it. But come on, Indiana. I mean, they're not a. All right. Anyway, I've said my piece. As Daniel kind of alluded to earlier in the broadcast or the podcast, I mean, there was some, you could say it's off the field or just out of the program issues. And it goes back to something, I don't know, you could say last year, this year, I forget when it actually happened, but it's, I don't know, it's been going on for a while. But the issue with Kyron Lacy and the incident that kind of stopped everything for him. It was this car accident that he was implicated in. And at the time, he ended up being arrested and charged and swore his innocence. I think his lawyer even spoke at his funeral saying, just give me one more day, man. I got you. You know, he's trying to prove his innocence. Wasn't able to, unfortunately. But all of a sudden, this week, this video comes out. Well, more than one video, actually. But the one video kind of shows that he was, like, nowhere near the scene. They said that he caused it because he was in oncoming traffic or something. But he was, like, 70-something yards behind the car, like, after the collision. And then you can see his car coming in. I don't know. I still was waiting to see, you know, if we had a trial, we probably would have seen some sort of graphic showing where he was. But looking at what that road was and where it happened, it looked like it was on a curve. So I'm still confused on how someone sees him coming and then a head-on collision happened before he got there. Because, you know, if that's what they're worried about, why would you just, oh my God, someone's coming, let me just slam on the brakes and someone hit them from behind and then drove him into the oncoming traffic? I'm not sure. That's what I'm missing. But it doesn't make sense that he would be the one responsible for all of that. I got to say it, even if he was like 100 or however many yards down the road in the left lane, because that's, I don't know. Is that what you guys kind of got from what was released, that it kind of shows that, I don't know, was he even close enough to really
to have any influence on the car crash at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because the initial report that came out was like he was speeding and he swerved in the opposite lane, and that's what caused the collision caused the fatality, and then he kind of drove off and that was it. And so like he was at fault for kind of initiating the whole chain of events.
The way I imagined it is like, you know, he passes some car and goes into oncoming traffic and causes that car to swerve out of the way, which then hit in oncoming traffic. That's the way I imagined it from the report when it actually came out.
Yeah, and the recent video that just surfaced, what you see is the two cars having a head-on collision, and then maybe a second or two later, Kyron Lacy, you can tell it's him, it's like a neon Challenger, swerves around the two cars and continues driving, and then he's out of the frame, and that was it. So he was within, like, visual distance, but the accident happened before he was even like on the scene, and so he did indeed drive around the cars and drive off. So I mean, he didn't stop to render aid or anything, but you don't really know what happens to that kind of bang bang moment. And so it seemed that he was just kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time almost. And then there was other reports and videos of like the cops kind of talking to other witnesses and trying maybe to say that, oh, this was Kyron Lacy's fault, and it turned into kind of one thing after another. And it's sad that it worked out this way. It would have been good to have all the truth happen right when it occurred so that the general public could know the right thing. And obviously maybe Kyron would still be with us. That's the thing that's a little bit frustrating to me is like, I mean, he committed suicide and, but why would he do that if he knew that he was in the right the whole time? But I assume he was under kind of immense pressure from everybody online saying he's a horrible person for doing this, and it could be a potentially years long legal battle, et cetera, et cetera. So obviously he was in a bad spot either way, but unfortunate, but at least everyone seems to be kind of coming together to support him and his family after this has kind of come to light.
Yeah. I mean, even you saw last night, bringing it back to football, CJ Daniels had the long live Kyron Lacy on his eye black.
Mm-hmm. And his kind of signature like jig touchdown celebration is in college football video game. And people like have been doing that like in the NFL and stuff too.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really terrible. I hope that there's like it. If this is truly like, you know, I hope that it's investigated. I hope that it's proven or you know, that the facts really come out and that the police office, if it indeed, you know, shows that he was nowhere near the car accident, that the police that, you know, kind of ruined this guy's life and mm-hmm. led to the end of this guy's life are held responsible, because it's just terrible. It's really terrifying for everyday people, because you just think about it, like you're 75 yards away from an accident and then you're blamed for it, and you have to then the onus is on you. It's like, okay, now go prove you're innocent. The police right. say that you're that you were the cause of this accident. Now go prove you're not. It yeah, that really goes against the whole like foundation of our judicial system of like innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm. That's the other strange thing to me about this is like, how did kind of the cloud of blame drift down onto Kyron Lacey kind of in this if he was not to blame to start with? Like, why did it the media or the police or whoever kind of attach it to him other than like he was the only kind of person of note involved? I don't have a good answer really, but it's just confusing, I guess. And it would have been nice to get things kind of cut and dry from the get-go and avoid a lot of this confusion and sadness.
I don't doubt that he was. Maybe he probably was going fast. I mean, that's not mm-hmm. a reason to you know, be going fast is not. I mean, I guess it can be illegal, like breaking the speed limit, but like it's not illegal, like time in prison. I don't know. I think you bring up a good point, Daniel.
Yeah, and it's all, well, he brought up a point too. It's like, why would he do that if he knew that it wasn't him? But I don't know, maybe just because if he was driving erratically and if everyone was pointing at him, even though he probably wasn't the one that, like, maybe someone looked at him and reacted a certain way so they could say that's him, but that's why you wait and let lawyers go over the thing, because they can prove it. You know, they'll get a guy out there with a stick and a wheel and measure how far away you were. And it's like, no matter what happens, no matter what Kyrie Lacey was doing, he did not cause whoever rear-ended that car to not be paying attention. That's on them. If that's what happened, if someone wasn't paying attention, this dude slams on his brakes because he sees this neon purple Charger coming at him. Whoever's behind him, that accident's on them. You can say whatever you want after that. The other point is, I mean, if someone, I can't imagine that someone sees a car coming at them in the wrong lane and thinks the only option for me is to just steer into the other oncoming lane. It just doesn't make sense. So that's why I feel like there's some other facts that are missing, right?
Yeah, I think there do. Yeah, none of it makes sense to me. And I'll just have to wait to see, you know, what comes of it, but.
I would be so mad and happy at the same time if I was waiting trial and then I see this cop and someone says, no, that was that lady's fault, because that's what happened. And then all of a sudden he cuts off his video, and then later the guy makes a statement that, oh, it's, I don't know, you can't coach a witness. Cops can't coach witnesses. So if that's what happened, this is, you know, he would have been absolved.
Yeah.
Just because of the uncertainty of what that would have created. You know, it's a miscarriage of justice just because of that. But anyway.
It just shows you how terrifying the legal system is.
Yes, indeed.
Like you really just don't want to be involved. If you can stay as far away from a courtroom of any kind, civil, criminal,
mm-hmm.
just go in there on a, you know, for a field trip. Like, don't send your kids to the courtroom for just to learn. Like, you should stay away from all legal things, because just stay away.
Just stay out of public, everybody.
I kind of agree.
Yeah, and I'm talking to you too, Mark Sanchez.
Y'all hear that story? That. This was like similar, like back and forth. Everyone's like, oh no, poor Mark Sanchez, he got stabbed. It's like, wait, he was like breaking into a DoorDash driver's car like while he was drunk. What is going on here?
The Sanchez, oh, I can't believe it. Like
he's topped the butt fumble.
He had so many great moments. Yeah, the butt fumble. Remember when he ate the hot dog on the side of the sideline when he was a Jet? That's a big controversy.
I forgot about that.
Good time.
It was a huge controversy. He was eating a hot dog, and they were like, "That's not becoming of a of a starting quarterback. Like, why is he eating a hot dog? He's not taking the game seriously.
I don't know. He brought his team to two AFC championship games, didn't he?
Weren't they back-to-back?
Yeah, first two seasons. I mean, so
he kind of made Rex Ryan, like Rex Ryan has a job on ESPN probably because of Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
Because if not, Rex Ryan just fades into another failed Jets coach, I think.
Right. Craziness. Anyway, but yeah, just don't leave home, people. I guess that's the moral. Do leave home for the LSU game this upcoming Saturday. It's going to be a good one. It's a 6:45 kickoff, 7:45 Eastern time. It is on the SEC Network if you can't make the trek. Like I said, I think it'll be a good show for the – I hope it'll be a good show for the Tigers. Kind of get us ready for the game after that. But I know, 1 week at a time. Anything else that y'all wanted to talk about, or is that pretty much it?
One thing I just want to give an injury update, going into as of Sunday night, looked into the status of Aaron Anderson, who could be a really our number one receiver, could be a huge impact on this game. Brian Kelly cited that he has multiple injuries, not just one.
Bad.
He is dealing with, his hip, elbow, knee, and toe. So it sounds like a song, you know, hip, elbow, knee, and toe.
Knees and toes.
But he did say he should be available for South Carolina. So
he'll be in immense pain every single time he gets tackled, but he will be out there.
Yeah. So look for number one to be on the field, according to Brian Kelly. But as we discussed for, you know, many minutes of this podcast as well at the beginning, don't know if you can trust Brian Kelly. So also you could look for him to not be available.
Right. Or he'll just be blocking for our eye formations and that's it.
If we run out there in the power eye, Aaron Anderson does not need to be anywhere near.
Fair enough. Well, I think that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Tune in next week. We will have the recap of the South Carolina game, as well as all the other action in college football. So until then, hope everyone stays safe, stays tuned, and stays home. And we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.